The following is a Raygun-armed, faster-than-light presentation of GalacticNetcasts.com.
The Time Traveling Robots and Space Podcast starts now.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode number 24 of the Time Traveling Robots in Space for Wednesday, March 7th, 2012. Whenever you say in space, Paul, you have to say it like this. In space! And make those weird hand gestures that you were just doing there.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay. This is the show where we talk about time travel, robots, and space. From Wausau, Wisconsin, I'm Dave Nelson. And from the rather, I'm sure, warmer than here, but today was pretty warm for a day in March in Wisconsin. It was 50. It felt like a heat wave. You are in Glendale, California, and Mr. Paul Swickard is the guy's name. Mm. That's him right there. He's also the co-host of the ever-popular An Hour of Sleep podcast. How's that going for you, by the way?
It's going well. It's going well. We've done it for a lot longer than people know. So it's about giving the people what they want. It's about delivering. It's about, you know, building up the brand. That is what it's about. I'm sure you know, Galactic Netcast, it's on its way to stardom.
Yes, we are shooting for the top, and I'm not going to stop till we get there. So let's keep the ball rolling, as they say. All right, in the future, if you would like to see us do the show live, we stream it on Spreecast.com every Wednesday evening at 9 p.m. Central, 7 p.m. Pacific Time. And for our Spreecast.com viewers, feel free to ask questions throughout the show. Either type them into the chat room or submit one on the bottom right where it says comment or question, and we'll put it into the lower third and include it into the show. Now, if you're new to the Time Traveling Robots in Space, we run things down like this. We talk about each subject, the time travel, the robots, and the space. And then we do our recommendations, and then we ask the question of the week. So, you got that, Paul?
It's complicated, but I'm down.
All right, let's get this thing going.
Sector 1, time travel.
All right, from Entertainment Weekly. You know that magazine, right? Entertainment Weekly?
I think they do entertainment, and it's a weekly thing.
Yeah.
Sorry, dumb joke. I got nothing else. But yes, Entertainment Weekly.
You're right on both counts. Anyways, according to Entertainment Weekly, Fox has canceled its prehistoric time travel show, Terra Nova, after one season, ending months of will they or won't they speculation. And I'm very upset. I'm very distraught over this decision that Fox made. This wrong decision. If it was up to me, I would have kept it on for at least one more season. But hey, I'm not the network. I'm not, you know, trying to make money. So what do I know, right?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, you know, time travel robots in space, and you know what the people want. Again, going back to the same thing, you are a consumer, sir. So going against what the core demographic wants, I'd say that's a disservice.
Yeah. Well, okay. The good news is that the studio that made the actual show, 20th Century Fox TV, they are shopping it around to other networks. So it may not be over. Don't close the book on Terra Nova as of yet. The decision was handed down despite a few factors that were in the show's favor. A creatively strong two-hour finale, Fox canceling House, and Alcatraz underperforming in recent weeks. So those factors were in the show's favor, but apparently it wasn't enough, and the show got canceled. Terra Nova will likely end up the highest-rated canceled show of the season, averaging 10.1 million viewers and a 3.6 adult demo rating once you add in week of DVR playback. So that's unfortunate. Did you ever get a chance to see any episodes of Terra Nova, Paul?
I saw one. And it was kind of, I don't know. It was kind of lackluster, in my opinion. It was just that I don't know which episode it was, but it was the one where they found all those little pterodactyl-looking things, mm-hmm. and they just found a couple, and they had all flocked to that. They had all flocked to their wherever they settled their little colony.
Yeah,
and then they realized that they had settled in their whatever it was, their mating ground.
Yeah, their mating or their nesting grounds. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay. I think we've talked about this on Time Traveling Robots in Space before, but I think that networks aren't patient enough, and I don't know if they can afford to be patient enough. Like, if you look back in the history of television, a lot of first season for shows were bad. Like Star Trek The Next Generation, their first season was horrid. It was terrible.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know. I mean, a lot of times I just don't understand what they're thinking. Like, there are some shows that are just really strong that they cancel, and other times they take a look and they take a gamble on these other things that I would never think would be, you know, of any value to anybody, mm-hmm. and they just keep going with it. So I in the interest of the genre, I really hope that Terra Nova gets picked up by somebody.
And poor Jason O'Mara, this is the second network show that he's been on that's been canceled. So I hope that he doesn't end up being like a bad omen on shows whatever show he's on gets canceled. I hope that it's not a continuing trend for him.
Yeah, I hope not. That's too bad. He seems like a nice guy. You know, he's one of those guys that you see on television that you really hope is nice.
Yeah. And he seems that way because I follow him on Twitter. Granted, a lot of his tweets lately have been about the whole campaign to save Terra Nova, but he seems like a genuine right. person. He talks about Scotland, where he's from. He talks about football, well, soccer to us, football there. And he seems like a really – oh, he's from Ireland? Okay, I'm wrong. Anessa says Ireland, so I'll take her word for it. He seems like a nice guy. So let's hope that things turn around for him and Terra Nova gets a second chance somewhere else. All right, so Paul Swickard, or Paul Swickard, as they call you on Star Trek, what do you got for us?
Ladies and gentlemen, time travel has claimed the lives of two people.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry to say. We've had two deaths in the name of time travel. So there you go. And much less two Chinese schoolgirls in a rather interesting news story published by a Chinese newspaper. There's actually speculation that this story is actually Chinese propaganda for whatever reason. I'm not sure what their goals are. But two young girls had committed suicide in the hopes of time traveling back in time like the characters on popular TV shows. Now, let me pause right there. Have you ever heard of anybody from any television show in any form of entertainment try to kill themselves in order to time travel? Was that a solution?
Okay, they got some – okay, this is in China, so I'm sure these are shows that we've never seen before because they're in China. But what kind of – children's show, I'm guessing this is a children's type show that's showing suicide, but besides that, a show that the premise is committing suicide to go back in time? What the hell?
I couldn't say, sir. I honestly couldn't say. I think maybe they're mixing their metaphors a little bit in saying that, you know, people are time traveling all the time in popular media, which is absolutely true. But yeah, suicide was not on the table. Anywho, the English language site said that the story originally came from the China Daily, mm-hmm. and a fifth grader apparently realized she had lost the remote control for a rolling door at her house, so she decided to kill herself. That is exactly how it sounds, folks. What they're claiming is that she found out that she lost a remote control and decided to kill herself in the hopes of traveling back in time. And not just, you know, a little bit back in time. She said they said they had planned to go back to the, I think the, I don't know how to pronounce that, Jing Dynasty.
Yeah,
maybe
either.
But that is between six.
Yeah, Jing. I think it's Jing.
Jing.
Yeah.
But it's but that era is between 1644 and 1911. So, yeah, and the, apparently their goal and to travel back to that era was to make a film of an emperor, and she wanted to visit outer space.
What? Oh.
So I realize this sounds. I know. I realize this sounds a bit jumbled because that's how it's written. So yeah, I don't know if people are expected to believe this or if there is a different reason. Who's to say?
My mind is going to explode trying to wrap my head around this thing. I'm trying to figure out. Mm-hmm. There's so much going mm-hmm. on here. And Anessa in the chat room says that she would have been dead a long time ago if she had killed herself because of lost remotes, which is true for most of us.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, suicide method is drowning in a pool. So
this is such
commitment.
This is such a convoluted story. It seems, you know what this seems like to me? It seems like, especially after you saying that last part about how they drowned in pools, it sounds mm-hmm. like this was an accident, and they're trying to cover up that this was an accident. The parents or whoever else was in charge of these kids,
right.
They were trying to cover up the fact that they were negligent and let these kids drown in a pool.
That's horrible. But given how just kind of jumbled and nonsensical this whole thing is, that is very possible. I had heard of a similar thing happening a lot in Japan. Like the crime resolution rate in Japan is ridiculously high. It's like 98%, something ridiculous like that. And the speculation is that the reason for that is because whenever the police come across a murder, for example, that they can't solve, they rule it an accident. So it's not. So there, it obviously would make sense that they're, you know, if a crime has been committed. Yeah, absolutely. We solve those things all the time. It's because that if they don't know, like if they aren't confident in that they can actually resolve the crime, then they'll just call it something else.
And they
so that seems to be what's going on here.
And they don't want to be dishonored. I think that's another factor. It's a cultural thing, I believe.
Right.
Yeah.
That could very well be. So, yeah, I'm sorry. We have found our first two people to die in the name of time travel, whether it be Chinese propaganda or in reality.
That we know of.
That we know. Yeah. Okay. There you go. That we know of.
All right, so time travel, we're done with that. Let's move on. Before we do, though, don't forget you can leave us feedback. And we make it easy for you. We make it very simple. You can send us an email, and that address is galacticnetcasts@gmail.com. You can call our voicemail number. That's 805-328-3966, or leave a comment on the episode page of this episode at galacticnetcasts.com. Again, galacticnetcasts@gmail.com. Our voicemail number is 805-328-3966, or leave a comment on the episode page at galacticnetcasts.com.
Sector 2. Robots.
All right. From TV by the Numbers website, BBC America has announced that it will develop two new series. One of them is robot-related. Wired, that's the name of it, and another one called The Deadbeat, with producers of the hit UK show The Misfits. And The Misfits is apparently a really good show. I've seen like 1.5 episodes, but I hear I should watch more of it. It's that good. So I'm thinking about going back and watching The Misfits to get ready for these two other shows. Wired takes place in a world that looks exactly like today, except it has SYNS. That's SYNS. And that's short for synthetic organisms. So I'm guessing they're like androids. Or I guess they could be like clones. But for the sake of this show, they're androids. They're robotic. They're exact replicas of human beings. and the newest luxury accessory money can buy. Wired explores our evolving relationship with technology, the boundaries of society's values and moralities. Now, in the deadbeat, you're probably thinking that there's a dead person involved, and you'd be right by saying that. In Deadbeat, two cops, one dead and one alive, become a reluctant team working from leads in the world of the dead to track down killers in the world of the living. It sounds dumb.
Look, let's talk about robots. I'd rather talk about robots.
Yeah, okay.
So Sins.
Yeah.
See, I thought you were going to go into a place like, I thought that this was going to be something like, if you have two alternate worlds, one has, you know, synthetics, other one has people. What if the synthetics started making like biotic type things like us, like people? What if they were the creators of the people and then they started using them in the same way that we use robots? Ooh.
You just blew my mind, Paul.
Mind blown.
Yeah. That would be cool. That is something that I want to see. I wish I knew more about this series. It's from what the description says here. It sounds interesting, I think.
Interesting name choice too. Yeah. Why would you call them Sins? That carries a bit of weight to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because when you hear the word sin, you think of S-I-N. You're not going to think of S-Y-N-S, short for synthetic organisms.
I do not know. Yeah, Deadbeat Cop, that's bad. That sounds awful.
Let's skip over that. the reason I think that Wired, the Sins, are talking about like androids or robotics because of the name of the show, which is Wired. So I'm guessing it's an android or some kind of robotic being that are the synthetic organisms. I'm just encouraged by the amount of science fiction we keep on hearing about that these networks, the cable networks, are working on. Like, we've talked about some shows that Sci-Fi Channel's working on, and now it sounds like the BBC is getting in on the sci-fi game. And by the way, this is going to be part of BBC America's Supernatural Saturday block, which Doctor Who is part of. So,
sweet.
Yeah. Looking forward to it.
I'm down.
Okay.
Rock on.
All right.
Okay.
Robots. You've got a couple of stories, right? Or no?
I know.
Yeah, you do.
No, I do.
Okay.
So we've talked a bit about a few episodes ago, we were talking about these little robotic flying helicopters that can actually assemble these different buildings, basically, like miniature buildings, just based on what a programmer puts in there. So you have all these different flying, what look like helicopters picking up blocks and stacking them on top of each other and making these really cool structures. Do you recall this particular story?
I do remember that, yes.
I have found those very same robots, and someone had decided to program them to play the James Bond theme.
Whoa. That's cool.
I don't know, maybe you guys can hear this. Do you hear this?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, what you're hearing is each one of those robots pressing down on either the keyboard or flying across a xylophone or hitting a drum.
There it is.
And I just thought that was pretty cool.
That is awesome.
So anyway, yeah, it's really cool. Like, I'll throw the link we'll throw the link in the show notes and I'll throw it into the chat right now. But yeah, I thought that was pretty darn cool. And so that was one. And I figured, hey, that's pretty cool.
Okay. Before you continue, I just want to say that I think the robots are learning. If we keep on teaching them these things, they're going to learn and they're going to take over the world. They're going to be our masters. They're going to be the robots on the movie that I'm going to talk about later on in the show. The Matrix. They're going to be those robots on The Matrix. What are they called? They're called... hang on. Damn it.
They're called...
What are they called? Why can't I find it? Damn it. No, it doesn't say.
And Anessa, you are quite right. They are going to be our musically inclined masters. Yeah. So they will be our masters, but they will have culture.
Yeah, exactly. See, maybe they'll be nice then. Maybe they'll be nice robot overlords. Okay. What's your...
We all have to go through all this. Yes, sir.
Okay, so they've got culture. They've got creativity. They can make music. But can they run fast?
According to DARPA, they can. And ladies and gentlemen, once again, DARPA comes in to make robots that can do really cool things. They have made a cheetah, what is what they're calling a cheetah. And the reason they call it that is because their legs are structured in the same way. And they are set. The robot set a new land speed record for 18 miles an hour. Previous record set by was 13 miles an hour in 1989. So it's been a while. It's quite interesting. So now, DARPA, lest we remind everyone, DARPA is the defense agency for work primarily for the United States government. So, yeah.
They make a lot of interesting stuff. DARPA basically is the government's playground. They don't necessarily intend on these things to be brought into the mainstream for real life use. They just they experiment, they screw around. Like if you worked for DARPA, that would be the dream job because you're getting paid to screw around.
They are technically a part of the defense for the DOD, and their DARPA stands for Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. So kind of like what you'd think of, like those special projects that nobody wants to talk about that's in the basement somewhere, that, you know, where you see people go in and you never see them come out, that kind of thing. Yeah, so they're kind of scary. And pretty much anything defense related, they have their hands in, and it's all advanced stuff, like whether it be, you know, whether it be robots or what, you know, if it's directly weapon directly or whatever. But yeah, DARPA has their hands in that. And anyway, yeah, the robot is pretty cool. Again, we will post the link to the YouTube video.
Yeah, I did that already.
And you can see it all. It's just on a treadmill. So you can see that the guy is holding up the wire that's actually that's attached to the robot, but it's just on a treadmill, and yeah, they clocked it at 18 miles an hour. So go DARPA.
Wow, that's amazing.
And
yeah,
please,
the video is,
please don't make any, that'll hurt us.
Well, okay, there's not much to worry about as of yet, because these robots that DARPA keeps on coming up with, and we keep on seeing the videos for, are all attached to something. But once they start developing robots and androids that aren't attached to something else controlling them, then we're in trouble. And I believe that I read in the article for this that that's the next step for this, is going to be a self-contained, self-powered thing. So we're going to have these robotic cheetahs running around, unpowered, trying to kill us. The robot cheetah overlords.
And there's our title for the podcast. Thank you, Dave. Robot cheetah overlords.
No
problem. Done!
I like when we can come up with a title early in the show, because then I don't have to think too hard. All right. Yeah, I definitely recommend checking out the video. Again, if you're watching the video of this show, we have it in the chat room, or if you're just listening to the podcast, then we'll put the link in the show notes at galacticnetcast.com.
Indeed. And if you come to the actual show, like if you come to the actual, the, you know, the watch the video, you can see me do things like this.
What is it? Is that Doctor Who stuff?
It's a catalog.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see.
I thought you might like that.
I see a TARDIS and I see a sonic screwdriver. That's awesome.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and you called it, Anessa. This is ThinkGeek.
Oh, well, I didn't even know that they had an actual physical catalog of any kind. That's pretty cool.
Me neither, until this.
That's cool. All right. So is that all you got on this cheetah, this robotic cheetah?
Yeah, robot cheetah does fast and cool things.
Yeah, I kept on seeing that video all over the place. Like on every social network, people were posting a link to that video. So we're just...
It's interesting because, I mean, I think what got people's attention was the fact that it broke a land speed record.
Yeah.
I think that's why people were just like, ooh, look at that. But, I mean, you and I have been talking about this forever.
I know. Yeah.
So you heard it here first, folks.
All right. We're going to talk about space coming up and some interesting subjects in that arena. But first, don't forget you can subscribe to this and Galactic Netcast's other shows, like The Alien Invasion, which we just wrapped up, and Anessa in the chat room was co-host on that show tonight, so that was a lot of fun. Check it out. Or you can check out the Sci-Fi Film School podcast, which is also up at galacticnetcast.com. Subscribe to the podcast by clicking on the iTunes logo or by filling out the email form, and whenever we post a new show, you'll be sent in an email a link to that show, and you won't have to sync your phone or sync your iPod to your computer and download it. All you'll do is click on the link and listen to it within your browser. Also, on the website at galacticnetcast.com, along the top menu, we've got links to our social networks. And if you want to keep up with what we're doing, like when we're going live with the shows on Spreecast or stuff like that, subscribe or follow us on Google+, Facebook, and Twitter. That's the best way of finding out what we have going on.
Space.
All right, here we go. From the MarySue.com. Yes, that's an interesting name for a website. The MarySue.com. Yeah. You may have heard of the recent discovery of a lost original series Star Trek script that they never produced. It was lost for many, many years, and they just recently found it. Anyways, 45 years later, the fan-produced web series Star Trek Phase 2 has announced that they'll be shooting the story. They'll be shooting this episode. Have you ever seen Star Trek Phase 2, Paul?
No, I have not.
You should check it out. It's a really well-produced show. Like, if you were to just think of the original series Star Trek, but produced today, that's what these guys are doing. It looks as good, if not better in some areas, than the original series. Star Trek.
Okay.
Star Trek Phase 2.
I could get down with this. All right.
Okay.
All right.
The story gets better. The lost episode titled He Walked Among Us was written by Norman Spinrad, who is probably best known for his other Trek story, The Doomsday Machine. Remember that big turd in space that tried to swallow the Enterprise?
Yeah.
That's
kind of hard to forget.
Yeah, that's the Doomsday Machine. So it's coming from a pretty good writer. The Star Trek Phase 2 is a semi-professional production, and they've been nominated for Hugo and Saturn Awards. They were also named Best Sci-Fi Web Series by TV Guide. The kicker is Spinrad wants William Shatner for the role he had originally written for Milton Berle. See, this was supposed to be Milton Berle's comeback back in 1966, 67, 68, whenever this was supposed to be. And now, since they're producing it now, he wants William Shatner, not as the role of Captain Kirk, but he wants William Shatner as the role of this other character in this episode. So only time will tell if the original Captain Kirk will agree to play somebody besides the role that he's famous for. But
it's anybody's guess on that one. If he had been asked to reprise his role as Kirk, there's no way he'd do it.
Yeah,
there's no way.
Uh-huh.
Like I saw him. He was promoting some play or something there, or some
his music
television show that he was doing.
Yeah, his play. He just recently had a play on Broadway. So yeah, that's probably what he was promoting. Yeah.
He was promoting something, and I saw an interview with him on the Colbert Report, and he kind of cringed the moment Steven brought up Star Trek. Like, they weren't talking about it for most of the time anyway. So, but yeah, Kirk, Shatner was just kind of like, he kind of like recoiled at the whole thing. He's just like, no. So I don't know who's to say. I think that he might do it because he's not like having to do the same old thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know.
There's been other Star Trek actors who have appeared on this web series. Nichelle Nichols, who played Chekhov again, the original Chekhov. Koenig,
oh,
Koenig,
I don't know his name.
Koenig. What's his first name? Koenig. Walter, is it Walter Koenig? Yeah, Walter Koenig.
Walter. Sorry, I'll let you roll that around a little bit more.
Watch Dave completely lose his mind trying to think of the name Walter Koenig. No, Walter Koenig was on Star Trek Phase 2. There was a couple of actors who were on Star Trek Voyager who have appeared on Star Trek Phase 2, and they never play themselves. They never play the characters they originally played on Star Trek. They always come in as a guest role, just so it doesn't confuse people. But yeah, I highly recommend it. even if Shatner doesn't, agree to be on this, I still recommend checking out Star Trek Phase 2. All right, so what do you have,
Dave? I know you warned me, and I warned you, but we're going to talk about video games, specifically one. And that being Mass Effect 3 that has come out this very week. And point of fact, it came out yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And that has a lot of space in it.
It does.
So I'm just saying, it is right up our alley.
Uh-huh. I know. I'm aware.
So, yeah, Mass Effect 3. It is just in yesterday, in the time that I played it, I'm probably about 4 hours in. Every bit as awesome as I had hoped it would be. Mass Effect is where the people are making an especially big deal out of this one is because this is supposed to be the end of this particular story arc and sort of wrap up the whole story of Shepard and, you know, all of the events that have happened since the first Mass Effect. So, yeah, people are really excited about it. And so far, it's absolutely living up to my expectations anyway. And, yeah, so... I don't know. I'm trying to think of how to explain what has happened so far in a way that would make sense.
I know the basic story. I actually went, I spent a Saturday because I read this article on io9.com about how the Mass Effect universe and the Mass Effect story is the best science fiction story ever told.
I read that.
But it was like one of the best science fiction stories ever told. And yeah. I actually went on YouTube and watched a bunch of the story videos because people will post up just the story part, not the gameplay, but the story part. So I'm kind of caught up on the story. And I actually, on our last show on the Alien Invasion, which we did on Spreecast earlier tonight, my creature feature is what we call it. It's our spotlighted alien of the week. Was a Reaper. So so Mass Effect 3 has worked its way into two of our podcasts now, but continue.
No, but absolutely. It actually got a shout out on 30 Rock last week.
Wow.
It's weird. It's like gotten into some really high profile stuff, a lot more than I thought it would. I've seen, of course, I've seen like all those crazy trailers and things like that. So, yeah, the Reapers that Dave was referring to is an invading force on Earth that are these essentially giant, and when I say giant, I mean several times larger than skyscraper type beings that are robotic, that are invading and, well, not just invading, their goal is to wipe out humanity. And, well, I can't even say that. Wipe out all life other than themselves.
And they get they activate whenever they come back to life whenever somebody activates the Citadel, right?
Yeah, it's very complicated. Like when you start in Mass Effect 1, you have no idea what Reapers are. You have no idea that they even exist. You are actually following in pursuit of this other guy but you don't know it at the time. But he is actually being controlled by the Reapers. So only at the very end of the first game do you even know what Reapers are.
Hang on.
Okay.
I'm actually writing.
I was like, oh, all right.
I'm writing something in the chat room. So if you want to continue, you can.
Absolutely. So then in Mass Effect 2, you are trying to figure out, among other things, what it is that Reapers want, or even more information about them. And, you know, you have all these different, you, it's so complicated because they've told this story in such a way where they have so many different alien races, all with different motivations and different, you know, different mentalities. Like, for example, one of the races is called the Krogan, and they're very warring type people. And another different race had actually a very scientifically minded race were trying to control the population of the Krogan by not really sterilizing them, but pretty darn close.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you have, and so there's a lot of bad blood there. So now the whole crux behind this story is you're trying to unite all of the known alien races. And that's not easy when you have such a big, long history of a lot of bad blood, people doing a lot of bad things. So, I mean, think about just us and humanity, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it'd be trying to, like, unify the entire human race to go and fight something that is a big threat. I mean, you can imagine how difficult that would be. Like, that, yeah, it would... Just thinking about it makes my head hurt.
By the way, the Krogan, not to be confused with the Kurgan from the Highlander series.
Right. Krogan is not Kurgan. So undoubtedly people have been watching, you know, trailers about it and stuff like that. And another thing, just for all of you who are not very gameplay inclined, Dave.
Yeah, that's me.
We have one of the things that they've tried to do in this most recent game is one of the questions that they ask you up front is what kind of experience you want to have. And one of the choices there is that you are much more it's much more of a story-driven experience rather than a gameplay experience.
Okay.
In other words, they super dumb down everything else. And they just like it, the whole driving force is behind the story, because most, like, more than half the game is just watching. You're in dialogue trees or something like that. You're trying to actually decide, okay, do I want to say this or do I want to say this? If I say this, then this could happen. If I say this, then this could happen. It's that kind of thing. That's really what Mass Effect, that's kind of what made it really popular.
So they're producing.
And then, of course, you have other things as well.
So they're producing a movie. Do you know if they're producing a movie on just the first game? Like, could this become a trilogy of movies down the line sometime?
There's definitely enough content for it.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly what it is that they want to show for the film.
It seems like a rich
is
enough. Go ahead.
Sorry, go. Is that official? I think it is, isn't it?
Yeah, it is official. I know that they're not like in pre-production yet. I know that they're just still at the story phase. They're still writing the screenplay, but I think they've got some investors and they're serious about making it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good. I'm glad to hear that. Normally, people, especially video game inclined people, kind of cringe at the whole idea of like, oh, geez, you're going to make this into a movie. It's going to suck.
Yeah. Well, okay. But video games being made into a movie don't have the best track record in the world. There's been some really bad game movies.
They have, absolutely. They've, like, the track record has not been great, and vice versa. Like, making a video game out of a film also has a very, very bad track record.
Yeah, yeah.
So I can understand the hesitancy. So, but I hope they can, you know, like, oh, you know, like, any film, I hope they can stay, like, you know, like a film adaptation of a book, for example. I hope they understand what makes those things, that the source material, awesome.
Yeah.
I hope they understand that.
I think that this story is rich enough. I think this universe has enough layers that you can make a good movie or two or three out of it.
I hope so. I really do. I definitely think the material is there. You just have to have someone who is I guess, cinematically inclined enough to make it the way it needs to be made.
Yeah, that's the thing. You need the right producer. You need the right screenwriter. You need the right people behind the movie to make it a success. And I think we're going to see a lot more video games made into movies in the future because these video games are so story driven now, a lot more than they used to be. Yeah. You know, I mean,
oh, by leaps and bounds. Yeah, there's no comparison. Like now, like they're actually trying to involve the people in an interactive story. Mm-hmm. That's what it's doing.
Yep.
That's its whole goal. That's definitely Mass Effect's goal.
Yeah.
And yeah, I hope they do a good job with it. I really do. Another thing is too, is that if you watch those trailers, you notice that it's very much an action driven experience. Like even to fringe websites, like I guess not fringe, but game specific sites, like all of the trailers that people had gotten were very action driven. And what's interesting about that is that that's never been what Mass Effect has been about. Not really. So I think it might have been a combination of them trying to get an audience that normally wasn't there before. Or trying to get to sort of mainstream kind of a deal.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just interesting. I found that fascinating because I think EA, the producers of this, I think they know that I think they know that they are billing it as something different than it is.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering why. And I think it's because they're trying to appeal to a broader audience. You know, they're trying to go, well, Michael Bay Transformers on us.
No, definitely. And movies do this even. I mean, movies will,
oh, sure.
They yeah. will, they were, they will promote a movie a certain way by the trailers, even though that may not be the overall feel of the movie. I think it was the movie Drive that came out last year. There were some people pissed off because it was marketed a certain way that the movie actually wasn't. People,
had you seen it?
No, I haven't seen it, but what I hear,
it's way different.
Yeah, what I hear is people were mad because they thought it was about driving, but it's not really about driving.
There are two scenes, and one happens at the very beginning.
All right, so
yeah, that movie's cracked. Anyway,
this is a really good way to segue because we were talking about Mass Effect and how that is being made into a movie, and I think that it would be maybe a good sequel or a good, you know, series of movies. Let's go from that to another actual series of movies. From the Art of Ralph McGuire is reporting. Well, they're not reporting. They the guy by the name of Ralph McGuire, he was behind the look of the original Star Wars trilogy, has passed away. Ralph McQuarrie, actually it's Ralph McQuarrie, not Ralph McGuire. Ralph McQuarrie, who also did design work on Raiders of the Lost Ark, E.T., and several other classic films, died Saturday at the age of 82. McQuarrie is best known for his work designing everything from Darth Vader to several iconic sets used in the Star Wars movies. Though his legacy will live on in some of the greatest films ever made, McQuarrie remained humble and told the San Diego Union-Tribune in 1999 he was just honored to be working with George Lucas when Star Wars was coming together. And he actually, there was more to the story and more to that interview. He was like, he wasn't even sure that these movies would ever get off the ground. And he basically did this as a favor to George Lucas. He was like, you know, thinking going in that, these movies will never get made. I'll just do it for him as a favor. And it turned out to be huge, you know? I'm sure that there was a lot of stories like that with people involved in the very first Star Wars thinking that this is never going to be a success. I'll just humor Mr. Lucas in his little fantasy space film, you know?
Star Wars? What kind of a stupid name is that? Whatever. I'm going to go draw something.
Star Wars. Talking about Star Wars. That Bill Murray lounge singer from Saturday Night Live back in the 70s? Okay. Never mind.
You should keep going.
That's all I know. I think that's all there is to that to that song, actually. All right. So, yeah, definitely check out the link. I keep on forgetting to put links in the chat room. We'll have the links in the show notes of the podcast at galacticnetcast.com. But check out that website for his art. It's very cool stuff. I kind of wish that...
His gallery is kind of awesome.
Yeah, I kind of wish that the costumes and the look that they actually ended up using, I wish it was more to his art, because his art actually looks more kick-ass than the costumes ended up being.
Mm.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
All right. Moving on with the show. Before we get into our recommendations, don't forget you can listen to this and the other shows on the Galactic Netcast Network on the Stitcher Smart Radio app for your iPhone, your Android phone, BlackBerry, webOS phones. They also have the app in other areas. They've got a web app as well, too. So Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. You can find it in your app store or go to stitcher.com/galacticnetcast. Enter the promo code galacticnetcast when you're signing up for a chance to win $100 in cash. So you don't want to take up space on your phone. You don't want to sync your phone to your computer, to iTunes to get the podcasts. You don't have to do any of that with Stitcher. It just streams to your device, and wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, you're listening to the time-traveling robots in space in an instant. So again, stitcher.com/galacticnetcast. Promo code galacticnetcast.com for a chance to win a $100 cash card. All right, let's move on to our recommendations. And my recommendation is a continuation of a series of movies that I promised that I would watch because you told me to.
I'm glad you're using that logic. Awesome.
The Matrix Reloaded and the Matrix series. The latest one I've seen was The Matrix Reloaded. And I kind of wish I would have watched, would have had the stomach to watch these back to back, or watch this one and then Matrix Revolutions, because they kind of go together. But I just want...
Yeah, let the second one marinate.
Okay.
Let it sit.
I still can't believe that both those were released in the same year. It's just, it kind of boggles the mind that they released these two movies pretty much back to back in the same year. Matrix, The Matrix Reloaded was released in 2003. It's the second installment in the Matrix trilogy. It takes place 6 months after the events depicted in The Matrix. Neo has proved to be a good omen for the free humans, as more and more humans are being freed from The Matrix and brought to Zion. Now, did they mention Zion in the first movie?
Yes. Yes.
They never
mentioned Zion, but they never showed it.
Yeah, they never showed it.
It was the last... It was either Tank or Dozer. I think it was Dozer. But he mentioned it as the last human city. That is what he mentioned it as.
Okay. And like you said, Zion, the one and only stronghold of the Resistance, Neo himself has discovered his superpowers, including super speed, ability to see the codes of the things inside the Matrix, and a certain degree of precognition. As a nasty piece of news hits the human resistance, 250,000 machines are sentinels. That's the word. That's the name I was looking for earlier in the show. The sentinels.
Oh. Sentinels. There you go. Cool.
They are digging towards Zion and would reach them in 72 hours. As Zion prepares for the ultimate war, Neo, Morpheus, and Trinity are advised by the Oracle to find the Keymaker. Are you the key holder? I am the Keymaster. Who would help them reach the source. Meanwhile, Neo's recurrent dreams depicting Trinity's death have got him worried, and as if that was not enough, Agent Smith has somehow escaped deletion, has become more powerful, and has fixed Neo as his next target. All right.
Awesome. So, I am so glad that you've seen this, because I have questions.
I have answers. Hopefully.
All right. A couple things. All right. I don't know how to put this delicately.
Don't worry about putting it delicately. Lay it all out in its ugliness.
Okay. What did you think of the prayer scene at Zion?
Which refresh?
Do you know what I'm talking about? One where they all like go into that cavernous type area, and then they all start, and Morpheus makes his big speech, and then they all start dancing.
Oh, that was supposed to be praying?
Well, yeah. I don't think the entire thing was prayer. I think they said that Morpheus was the one who did they called it praying. I don't understand why he called it that, but it was one of the chancellor, the mayor, or something like that. But anyway, yeah, I wanted to know, what were your thoughts on that particular scene?
Well, let me talk about the movie more in a general sense, because that was just one small piece of one of the reasons why I didn't like this sequel or this movie, because it seemed like they took a great concept, which was The Matrix, great movie, mm-hmm. great story, great effects, and they morphed it into this thing that was just like over the top, and they included things they didn't need to include, and that's one of the things that they did not need to include in this movie. It seemed like this was one of the things that they tried to just stretch. They were stretching. You know, I'm sure that they could have made this and Matrix what's the next one? Is it Revolutions? Yeah.
Revolutions, yes.
Yeah, I think they could have made Reloaded and Revolutions into one movie, and it seemed like they extended the fight scenes and they included things they didn't need to include in this movie to kill time to make it a trilogy. Don't you think?
I'll tell you what I think, Dave.
Okay.
I find this movie interesting because there are some scenes and there are some ideas that I love. I think they're awesome. I love the interaction between I love Smith generally as a character, and I love the Oracle. I mm-hmm. think the Oracle is awesome. Yeah. I think she's a great character. And I remember thinking at the time that I had not thought of her. It would make perfect sense that she was a machine. And I had never considered that when I first saw The Matrix. Mm-hmm. I never thought that. I'm like, oh crap. Yeah. She's actually one of them. That's cool. I think one thing that the movie was really missing was the reveal. Like in the first Matrix, you had this whole thing of like, you know, what is the Matrix and what's going on? And you saw these insane things that made absolutely no sense until you realize what's actually going on. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden it becomes clear and there's this click. I've been thinking a lot about this. With some clever editing, they could have... No one would have known that Smith was still around. I would have loved to have the first time that the audience realizes that Smith is still there is when he walks up to Neo and interrupts the Oracle mm-hmm. in their conversation. I would have loved to have that been the first scene and just go like, you know, like, what? Smith is still around? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
But no, they pulled that way early, like just – like it was one of the first things that they'd done. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay. And then immediately after Smith confronts Neo for the first time, then you realize immediately that Smith can copy himself. There's multiple of them. And you're like, and you're still kind of left wondering, okay, what the crap is going on?
Mm-hmm.
I think that would have been amazing. I think that it would have been amazing, and they squandered it, Dave. They screwed it up.
Yeah, no. That could have been a bigger reveal. You're right. That would have made it that way. That would have made a huge difference if that would have been a vital scene in the movie, this big reveal that Smith was still around. And they never really explain how he can duplicate himself, right? They never really go into that too much.
No. No, not really. I think what you have to understand is, if you recall, Smith's words to Morpheus in the first one in the interrogation, one of the things that he had told Morpheus was he compared humanity to a virus. And he is a virus. That's what he's doing. That's exactly what a computer virus does. It takes things that are in its system and duplicates itself. Mm-hmm. That's what it does. So it makes a lot more sense in that context. But yeah, there was no real explanation. It was just kind of one of those things. I believe his words were, after that, I knew the rules. I knew what I had to do, but I didn't. And there was never any kind of rationale. It was just kind of like him developing more independence, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm.
But even from the first one, Smith was the only agent to ever show any sign of individuality, ever.
Yep.
So that's another important thing to keep in mind, too. Like, all the other agents have no personality at all. But Smith, he is somebody. He's unique.
Yep.
So I think that plays a part in it as well.
There was...
Yeah, I could talk about this a long time.
I can tell. there were... Like, I want to kind of follow up with something that you said. There were a lot of things that they could have made a bigger deal out of that they didn't in this film. There was a lot of small gems in this film that,
right,
without all the other crap, the unnecessary crap, it could have made a better movie if they would have focused on those little things more. Like the Oracle being one of the generations of the Matrix. You know,
I think that would have been awesome. I think the architect was a reasonably cool character. Like, the whole ending scene didn't make a lot of sense to me. Like, I don't get why it was that, their goal at the end was just to blow up a building, mm-hmm. Like, it was kind of anticlimactic for me, but you're right. I think they accentuated certain things and left other things alone, where I think a lot of really cool stuff could have been developed a bit more.
Am I wrong about thinking the fight scenes lasted way too long?
I know what they were due, but yes. And that's the other thing too. I'm glad you brought that up. In the first one, at the end of the movie, Neo is God. Like, and not even in a metaphorical sense, he is literally can make the world as he see fits. And now, all of a sudden, in the second one, they had to draw him back. They had to.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you don't have a film. You don't have any conflict.
Yeah.
That argument I've heard before, and it really lends itself to the idea that they were never intending for this to go any further.
Yeah.
But like, it was one of those things like, oh, crap. We have to put something together because this is way too popular.
Yeah, unplanned sequels are always worse than planned sequels. Like, the Lord of the Rings trilogy was great because that was a planned trilogy. Like,
oh yeah, of course.
The Hunger Games is the first of a planned trilogy of movies. And you're right. They
Back to the future.
Yeah, they didn't know that The Matrix would be this huge success. And they didn't know at the time they'd be making sequels. So you have to make certain sacrifices to continue the story. Yeah, you're right.
Mm. But yeah, there's a lot of really weird stuff. Now, Dave, I challenge you. You have to watch the third one, dude.
I'm going to.
You have to watch it.
Yes.
Because it is, like, if you thought the second one was different, the third one is kind of... you should watch to the third one.
Is it worse or better than the second one?
I don't want to say.
Okay. All right. Okay.
I don't.
Okay. I promise if I don't do it for this next episode, I'll do it for the episode after that, because I may need more than a week to recover from that piece of crap to get ready for the next one.
In the end, I thought it was an okay film.
Yeah.
It was okay. It wasn't horrible.
Yeah.
It was okay.
It's not as bad as I'm putting it out to be. It was still good. So, all right. So let's move from my recommendation to yours. What do you got? What do you got to recommend?
What do I have to recommend? You know what? I'm recommending Avatar.
Okay.
I don't want to recommend Avatar, but I felt like I have to.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you've seen it, yes?
Yes. I've seen it a couple of times.
Yeah. I thought the thing is that it's not original. And that is that's kind of been my problem with it, is that you've seen a lot of different films with that theme, like the sort of fish out of water, not really understanding the culture and then slowly falling in love with it. That's been done to death. But it's James Cameron, and he does it really well.
Oh, yeah.
It's, you know, Dances with Smurfs, I've also heard. Fern Gully in Space. Thank you, Anessa. It is, yeah.
Dances with Smurfs? Yes, that's perfect.
You've never heard
No, that? No, that's perfect. That's a perfect description of the film. That is awesome. Why have I missed that up until now? Okay.
I don't know. But anywho, yeah, it's a really good film. It really is cool. And I mean, I don't normally say this, but watch it for the visuals. The visuals are freaking gorgeous.
Oh yeah.
Like not even in 3D. Like you don't need to watch it in 3D. Watch it in HD.
And really
it's amazing.
And really I saw it in 3D when it was originally out, and it was one of the only movies that I've seen in 3D in recent years. And it was a good one to see because it was made for 3D and it was made by the person who was on the forefront of 3D technology.
Yeah.
So.
It's one of those. And the thing is that Cameron knows what the drawbacks of filming in 3D are. So he tried to avoid them. Mm-hmm. Whereas other movies, they don't care. It's just they kind of do. They'll just film a film the way they normally do it and not knowing like what looks weird. Right. Like, for example, when you pan really quickly, that looks really strange in 3D because things are popping out at you in the way in different ways. It's but no, he has a lot of. So basically, I read somewhere they did a lot of still shots, did a lot of, you know, planned things rather than the whole. Yeah, the typical thing, like the, you know, just the back and forth.
Yeah,
I guess is the best way to say it.
Exactly.
But yeah, 3D is the hype. I understand that, and I'm not a big fan personally. But Avatar is, I agree with you, Dave. Like, it's one of the few 3D movies that I thought was worth watching.
And back to your point of, you know, it not being original. That's not always a bad thing. Just because, let's do a whole Apple analogy since today was the big iPad 3 announcement.
Is there an iPad?
Yeah.
Really?
I heard something about it today.
I've been busy.
Apple is not an originator on everything, but they're really good at making something that already exists into a really good product. And James Cameron is like the Apple of filmmaking, where he can take a theme that's been used before, that's been done before, and make it into something even better. You know?
Okay, I'll buy that. I'll buy that. I think he, you know, not to say that every single work out there has to be original. I mean, you see things borrowing creative ideas from other people all the time. It's all in execution.
Yeah.
I think what most people are talking about when you're talking about Avatar is it's such a plot that you already know the end. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's a plot that you can see the events transpiring in such a way that you're like, okay, he's gonna fall in love with somebody he shouldn't. He's gonna do all this, that, and the other, and he's gonna rebel against this, you know, the people, and blah 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 blah. It's formulaic. You know what I mean? I think that's what got people annoyed. Like you can say that Terminator 2 wasn't, you know, an original idea, but the way it was done, like how they got from A to B, was awesome. Like the way it was executed. And the reason I bring up Terminator is just because another James Cameron movie.
Sometimes it's not about the destination, it's how you get there. That's my analogy.
I think that's a good lesson in life. Thank you, Dave.
It's funny that you would bring up James Cameron, because on the Sci-Fi Film School Monday, we did Battle Beyond the Stars, and that was the first film that James Cameron got his break on. He was doing special effects for that film. And to even go deeper than that, talking about, you know, not an original story, not an original idea, Battle Beyond the Stars was the sci-fi remake of The Magnificent Seven, which was the Western remake of The Seven Samurais. So...
Oh, yeah.
It really goes back to your point of nothing being original. It's all the same themes, just repackaged in different things.
And that's important, you know, not to diminish that. It you know, sometimes, in a lot of cases, stories need to be retold. We as a people forget things real easily.
Yep.
So, yeah.
All right, so your recommendation is Avatar, so go out and watch it. We are running a little bit long, so let's quickly wrap up the show with the question of the week. Why don't you ask the question, and I will be the first person to answer this.
Absolutely. In fact, I already have a good next question of the week.
Ooh,
so just be ready.
All right.
It will tickle the brain.
All right. Looking forward to it.
Anyway. If you could put yourself in any space-related video game, what would it be, sir?
Star Trek Online. Paul, as you know, Paul, and the listeners know, I'm not really a gamer. Don't play the Vigi games. But I do know...
Those crazy kids.
Yeah, I do know the Trek. And it would just be awesome to be able to be placed inside of the Star Trek universe, to be able to beam down somewhere, to shoot a phaser at a Klingon... To, you know, command a starship. It would just be cool to be, you know, to act out and to be in the moment, you know, be in those stories that I grew up and continued through my life watching. I consider Star Trek my favorite TV show, my favorite story, pretty much, period. And to be in my favorite story would just be pure awesomeness. That's my answer.
Awesome. I like it. That's a good one.
And yours, sir.
And at the risk of beating a dead horse, I absolutely would choose Mass Effect.
Of course, yes.
Of course I would. Yeah, why wouldn't I? Though I can't say I would want to be in the Mass Effect universe right now. Right now, things are getting kind of ugly.
It's a little hairy,
but, you know,
right now.
The before, it was a little uglier than usual. How about that?
Yeah.
Though, you know, if I were in Mass Effect 2 or 1, you know, just hanging out on the Citadel, I think I'd be cool with that.
Yeah.
It's kind of nice in there.
would you be Shepard?
That's a good question. I kind of am Shepard.
Well, everybody is. Everybody plays Shepard. Everybody plays Shepard. So,
the thing is, there are a lot of really, really awesome things about Shepard. Like, it's really hard not to respect him or her.
Or him.
Isn't
one of the choices this time around that Shepard can be a homosexual? Is that, I heard that's one of the choices, that Shepard could be gay?
That's always been the case.
Oh, really? Okay.
Your romance is undefined.
Okay.
You can pick whoever you want to flirt with. It's entirely up to you.
All right.
That's always been the case. Yeah. And it's always been, dude, that's the other thing. Like, yeah, we can't talk about this. I hate that when it makes headlines. I hate it.
Yeah.
It's like freaking A. It's not like they're making you watch gay porn.
That's the thing with everything. That's the thing with the media, the news media. They blow up every single thing. It's like the privacy thing. It's that gets blown way out of proportion because it's a headline. You know, it's not that important. Yeah. It's not that important at all.
But anyway, back to the point. There are a lot of really awesome things about Shepard. This guy, or this chick, gets put through the ringer. Like, constantly being screwed over by anybody and has to overcome. Always faced in these impossible situations and having to figure out answers. That's the thing. That's what I would hate about it, is you have to be just amazing. So yeah, I can see a lot of, I don't think I'd want to be Shepard. I think I'd want to be I'd probably want to be like a minion of Shepard's, like one of the companions that Shepard meets.
Yeah. Cool. Yep. So you'd want
off the top of my head, I'd say probably either Thane or Garrus.
Are these guys humans or other species?
No. Neither one of them. I believe Garrus, I think he's called a Krell, I want to say.
Okay.
Garrus, I don't know his race. But yeah, I just like them as characters. They're pretty awesome.
Well, I'm really excited. I want to go online now, and hopefully, if not now, very soon, somebody will be putting together and putting online the video of the story of Mass Effect 3. I know that I will never play it, so I'm interested in just watching the story part of it. So you got me.
I could do it, actually. Yeah. I have the capture equipment.
Get on it, sir. All right.
I must go. I must do.
This is going to be in the record books as the longest time traveling robots in space show.
Woohoo!
So, yeah. Kudos to.
Sorry. Was that too loud?
No. We have a reason to celebrate. I'm happy because, I don't know. I'm just happy.
You should be happy, Dave. You should be.
All right, so that's going to do it for this edition of the Time Traveling Robots in Space, episode number 24. Don't forget, you can leave us feedback. Call 805-328-3966. Email galacticnetcast.com. You can follow Mr. Paul Swickard on Twitter. He is Paul Swickard, S-W-I-C-K-A-R-D. And I am at The Interdave on Twitter. Until next time, Paul, may the Force live long and prosper, be with you.
Done.
This has been a presentation of Galactic Netcasts. To subscribe to this and our other podcasts, go to galacticnetcasts.com.